Ian Hall, please be seated.
With you, Mr. Hall.
Thank you, Your Honour. So before the tea adjournment, we were discussing flow sharing agreements and the drivers sitting in behind those flow sharing agreements. I'm interested to understand, in relation to flow sharing agreements that are currently in place, whether the exercise of deemed permit priorities has played a role in underpinning those flow sharing agreements. In your experience, have deemed permit priorities in the catchments that you're familiar with been exercised historically, and if so, in which catchments?
So it's variable across all of Otago, and I think that's why it's confusing.
So it's variable across the what?
All of Otago.
Oh, all of Otago, okay.
Yes, and so there are some catchments where it's crucial, and they basically hold the catchment, I guess, to account. And Manuhirikia main stem would be one of those catchments. So one of the lowest takes in the whole system has got the highest priority. So even though they flow share in that catchment, we have still got deemed permits. They have a flow sharing agreement that is part of the Falls Dam governance and paperwork. There is still a backstop of that high priority sitting there as, I guess, a bit of an incentive to everybody to share. In other catchments, such as...
I wonder whether we just might press pause there and deal with each of the situations that you describe. So staying with the Manuhirikia for now, my understanding was that the... water supply agreements that are held as between abstractors and the Manuhirikia Irrigation Company, the operator of Falls Dam, is regulating the flow sharing within the Manuhirikia. Is that your understanding of the current situation?
So Roger Williams, is this what you mean? Roger Williams is the operations manager, and he is responsible for ensuring the water is delivered. He's responsible for monitoring falls. And collectively with the Falls Dam Company calls the sharing ratio. So as the dam starts to drop and the river starts to drop, Roger delivers the technical information and the Falls Dam Company decide we're on 50%, we're on 75%, however that works. So it's a management governance decision. Yep.
So in that sense, the flow regime that is occurring is a function of the decisions being made by the dam company together with technical input pursuant to the flow sharing agreement.
Yes, they have a yep, yep.
So in a sense, that flow sharing agreement has replaced the exercise of the deemed permit priorities that may exist within the catchment.
It is an agreement that stays alive for as long as the parties are in the tent. The priority sits behind and is also alive and encourages compliance to that agreement. So they work hand in hand. If the priority was gone, then there's a vulnerability in that flow sharing in that catchment. So they work together. Yep.
So looking ahead then to the point in time when the priorities will expire, it's the intention to continue on the flow sharing arrangement as it has historically been, or is there a change being proposed in terms of the flow sharing vis-a-vis the order of previous priorities?
So the intent, The intent is mostly to stay true to what has been happening. So the irrigators, you know, as I explained, have been working towards this comprehensive proposal of minimum flows, residual flows, and the bones of it is similar to what we've got now, but more water in the river. Because we are not, there is no green fields situation. Everybody has been irrigating for quite some time. There's investments, there's decisions, there's all sorts of things that have happened. So it's quite important that it doesn't get thrown up in the air and then re-landed, that we basically assist the irrigators in trying to hold it steady, similar but with more environmental gains than what previously was happening.
So in that context, the absence of a priority is not precluding a water sharing agreement or water sharing arrangements being entered into by various abstractors in the catchment?
As I said, that what the priority does is means it incentivises everybody upstream to stay in the tent. Otherwise, there's an element of, well, actually, all the water is right beside me. There is no backstop now to stop me taking that water. Too bad about the person down the stream. It's water. It would be like, I'd liken it to water is income. And if you had four neighbours in a neighbourhood and you said, well, actually, in the middle of summer, there's one bucket and actually there's not enough money for all your salaries. So the behaviour would be, I assume, that the person closest to the bucket would take their full salary and the rest would miss out. So we've priorities incentivise it to go, actually, no, we're all going to take 20%. We're all going to take 30%.
But looking into the future, the priorities are going to fall away.
Yep.
But the falling away of those priorities hasn't acted as a barrier to communities working together to establish flow sharing arrangements.
So in the Falls Dam, it's a particular case in point. And so the priority of the one downstream motivates everyone to stay in the tent. There are other elements of that catchment. So what also happens is other permits on tributaries are called off at the same time as flow sharing happens. So we will lose that leverage if we roll over without something to hold steady on the priorities or flow sharing. We then lose that leverage as well. So in some instances, it's not going to matter. In other instances, it is going to be crucial.
Put PC7 to one side for a moment. The priorities will have expired by the time any replacement permits come to bear.
Yeah.
And so the priorities or the absence of a priority is not in and of itself precluding community engagement to establish flow sharing arrangements.
Right. Yep, you're dead right. However, flow sharing arrangements is a really tough job. It takes a lot of time to say, everybody to say, well, actually, I'm going to give up 10% of my income or 30% of my income. So it's the energy and the time required to nail those flow sharing agreements that isn't possible in a short-term, quick, efficient permit. So it's a bit of a... we've started the energy now to make that work, and I think Mrs. Heckler talked about the upper Lauder. There are other catchments or other sub-catchments that we haven't quite nailed yet because it takes a lot of people in the tent to try and work it out.
Right, so we've touched on the Manaheda Kia. Have you some other examples where priorities are currently being exercised?
Other examples where we've got flow sharing to minimum flows. There are sub-catchments of the Manaheda Kia that exercise priorities. Kyburn has been replaced and it has got flow sharing instead of priorities. I'm not familiar with any other, well, other than the subcatchments of the Manuhirikia. Doesn't mean they don't happen, but I'm not familiar.
Right, so just to be really clear, your evidence is that the only situation where you understand priorities to have been or being exercised is the Manuhirikia.
Oh, no, Pigburn. Pigburn as well, so the in the Tairi, the Pigburn exercise priorities, and I think you might have heard from Mrs Weir and Mr Herlihy.
Do you have a direct understanding of the exercise of priorities in that catchment, or should the court defer to the evidence from those primary witnesses?
Yes, no, I'm not familiar enough. I know the priorities are important, but I'm not familiar enough with how they call them on and off.
And in my language, as to whether or not the priorities are currently being exercised?
Yes, they are. I know they're being exercised.
Right, let's be really specific. So which catchment? So you say the Pigburn?
The Pigburn, they are being exercised, yes.
And the consent holders there that you're familiar with?
Yes.
Sorry, what are the consent holders' names?
Oh, so the two Mr. Herlihy's. Mrs. Weir is in that catchment. And there's Concept Farms. I don't know. Chris and Dale Mulholland given evidence? They're in that catchment.
Okay, so that's your evidence in relation to the Pigburn. Are there any other catchments where you have direct knowledge of priorities having been exercised as between competing users?
So, other than the Pigburn and all of the Manuhirikia.
Now, when you say all of the Manuhirikia, is that different to the examples given on the main stem?
So, yes.
Can you help me understand what you mean?
So when the falls dam is being released and then also the flow sharing has started, then there are a number of lower priority permits that are on the tributaries that currently get called off because the priority is on the main stem.
Now, is that situation one relating to deemed permit priorities, or is that a situation relating to RMA permits for which written approvals from ORUG may have been required, say, a decade ago?
Yeah, my understanding is it's both, and it relates to a date on a particular permit, but I would need to check that. I'm not 100% sure. It's more than just the RMA permits.
Was that your question? About written approvals?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I was trying to understand whether it was the exercise of a priority or a function of the written approvals that had been required by the dam company for RMA permits.
So there was some evidence last week that up until a certain point in time, but no longer is the case, that whenever there was an application for a permit, that was usually sent to somebody. Who was it? Falls Dam or Omako as an affected party. And because of that, then there was a negotiation by Omako to have the tributaries come into the tent, if you like, in terms of the flow sharing flow agreement anyway for the main stem. So they exercised the need to or the desirability of gaining Omakau's irrigation company's approval was the leverage used to bring them in the camp around the tent.
Yeah.
And so the question is the TRIB's participation more as a function of that, or is it a function of deemed permits, then if it is deemed permits, who's deemed permits? So it's sort of got two elements.
So my understanding is that it is both. It's those RMAs that had to come into the tent, and then it is the deemed permits that were issued after a certain date. And I want to say 1914, but I don't know for sure. So there is a date of a deemed permits that also fall into that category. It's actually a situation that the new regime is abandoning, because a lot of those permits are on the tributaries, and the new regime that's put up in the application looks to deliver a significant residual at the bottom of every one of those big tributaries. And we're acknowledging that those tributaries lose water pretty quickly, and those takes are already naturally cutting back through summer dry. So that's what happens now, but it's not what is proposed to carry through in the future. So it's one of the things that is looking to be tweaked, but the hydrology plan is that the decent sized residuals coming out of those tributaries will help support the main stem, and it's those main stem takes that then will, and the falls that will help balance the minimum flow at campground. So that's mostly, we're not looking to reinvent the wheel because it just makes it too complicated, but that was one of the things that did seem to be logical.
And so in that context, the priorities themselves aren't driving the flow sharing to come. That's something that's being negotiated out as between members outside of the planning process.
That's the idea. All of the fine-tuning behind has to still happen, and that's how we would replace the priorities and be sure that the minimums and the residuals are being adhered to. And everybody signs up to the Manahirikia Catchment Group's proposal. It will go on as a consent condition. And if you're in a sub-catchment, then that would be a consent condition as well, that you are assisting the rest of your other abstractors on that sub-catchment to achieve that bigger residual at the bottom. So the proposal is that there are these steps all the way through to replace that.
My understanding is there's been some testing of various scenarios.
Yes, there has been. Mostly the one that I think might have been described to you was the Lauder Creek one, because the Lauder Creek has got a substantial amount that goes to groundwater. And so mostly that was about how much do we need to leave to keep, can we keep surface water connection? So we needed to understand that. Matt Hickey and Roger Williams were at the helm of that, and NIWA, helping do it. But then also, if the farmers stop taking their abstraction, let that slug of water go, where does it turn up and how long does it take? So that was the farmers trying to understand this resource and what would be the best way to measure it and manage it in the future.
And so again, insofar as that assists understandings in relation to flow sharing agreements, that's happening outside of the confines of existing consents?
That is happening to understand the resource so that the proposal that is put up is as strong as possible, and that if surface flow is what needs to be there or is what's naturally there, then that's what needed to be delivered in the application. So it was about, that one was about understanding the resource as much as possible.
Right. I want to keep working through any other examples where you have direct knowledge of priorities having been exercised in catchments, if there are any others. So we've had the Manahirikia and the Pigburn.
Yeah, and so my colleagues handled the Poolburn and Ida Valley Irrigation Company, so I'm not, I could not comment on whether they are exercising their priorities. On one tributary in the Pisa, a priority is exercised.
Do you, can you provide some more detail about that?
It is a permit which has got two owners on it, and priorities come to the fore when we've got more than one take on a creek or in a catchment that's connected, and so they're less important on tributaries that run into Lake Dunstan because it's got plentiful water supply. But there's one permit. It has two owners on the Tinwald, and there's priorities exercised to there. Just going through in my head it's a bit unreliable actually, but just off the top of my head, that's as many as I could think about.
So the Pisa example. Two takes from the same take point or two separate take points?
Two separate take points.
And does the higher order priority have the lower in the catchment to take point?
Yes.
And what was the name of the water body from which the water was abstracted?
The Tinwald.
Tinwald. So in that situation, it's your understanding that the higher priority downstream is exercised, or is it that there's some flow sharing as between the two permit holders? They work it out between themselves.
There's flow sharing.
And are you familiar with the Lowburn?
Only a couple of takes on the Lowburn, little tributaries of the Lowburn, Tongue Spur, Thomas Johnson, not the main stem of the Lowburn, no.
And would it come as a surprise to you if the situation in the Lowburn was that whilst there were priorities, they hadn't been exercised perhaps for the last 30 years?
No, it doesn't surprise me. It depends on, it just depends on the characters and the businesses that are being run. That's the case in the Tyree there. We heard from Mrs. Sangster yesterday, there's deemed permits on that same stretch. They could call off the Sangsters as soon as they're not getting their maximum amount of water on their permit, and they don't. They roster off, on and off with the Sangsters. It's just the characters that are in that stretch.
It seems to be that situation of flow sharing, sometimes by formal agreement but often without a formal agreement, is the way in which the water resource is being managed, perhaps without reference to the deemed permit priorities. Would that be your experience?
Yes and no. Like on the Tyree, it doesn't matter because of those characters and how they are with their neighbours. On the Manihirikia, it is a little more fractious, and the priorities help keep it in place. And there are a lot of irrigators, and so it's on the Tyree, the example, they are four farmers doing their own abstraction for their own operation. On the Manihirikia, we've got four companies, and they're big companies, some of them, and there are directors and race managers who are responsible for doing the best that they can for up to 400 shareholders. And they're little shareholders, so they have to be a little more business-like in being sure that they've got some water that can go around all of those shareholders. Or, you know, if It's not just their own business that they're making decisions for. So it's just a slightly different flavour in the different areas. Yeah.
You made a comment in relation to there being no more greenfield areas for development. I may have misheard that. Do you recall what it was you had in mind?
I was referring to the discussion that we have with irrigators in replacing their current water that they are using. And so that is... the situation is that we've got established farms and established businesses that rely on their buckets of water. We are not dealing with new buckets of water and a lot of flat dry land when we're replacing these permits. So that was my reference.
In your experience, is there a desire in the Manahitakia catchment to expand irrigable areas on farm, or is the current irrigable area perhaps reflective of the water resource that is available?
So I can speak for my clients and what they say to me. No, in general, no, they're not expanding irrigable area. Right now, the feeling is one of extreme nervousness in holding steady in the water that they have been using. They all know that some water has to go back to a residual and to a minimum, so water's going back to the environment. They know that. That has immediate impact on their most reliable water in the middle of summer. So there isn't a general thought of expansion. Like any business, that they're always thinking, how can I do this better? I think that in my own business. How can I tweak this? How can it be more efficient? That's exactly what happens in all farming businesses. But in general, they are not expanding irrigable area. There's a few who are maybe looking at plentiful sources, or, you know, we've heard about people who are swapping from pasture to cherries, those sorts of things. But overwhelmingly, our clients are nervous about the future.
Right, I want to head back to your evidence in chief, if you still have that in front of you. And at paragraph 33, you outline the steps where, in relation to these applications, particular information is gathered in support of the application.
Yeah.
When you've been working through these applications, have you been gathering information on the types of land use occurring on each property?
Yep. So if they're sheep and beef, if they are dairy, do you mean?
Yes.
Yes.
And is that information included in the applications for resource consent that are subsequently lodged?
Yes, it is. If the application is a combination of, say, 10 farming businesses, then each farming business is referenced if they've all got a point of take. If the application, say, for Manahitakia Irrigation Cooperative down the bottom, 400 shareholders, then we've got tables and pie graphs. So it might say 20% is in vineyards and 30% is in orchards, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you've given some examples in your evidence of deemed permits already replaced.
Yes.
And you step through a number of the catchments, including, in the first instance, the Kyburn, and I'm at paragraph 51.
Yes.
And in relation to the permits that issued with respect to the Clyburn, were there any conditions imposed restricting the use to which land could be put?
No, Clyburn is all sheep and beef. So no, there wasn't any restrictions on in the consent. That permit was replaced at the time that the Regional Council's water quality rules were alive and the date was imminent. The ORC have since taken the date out. And so in all of this, in the work for the Clyburn, that was at a time when the farmers appreciated that the leaching limit through Overseer had to be 30 kilos or less for everybody in the Clyburn. And there was a date for when that needed to be in place. And the other thing that was in place at the time when the Clyburn was being done was that the water quality leaving your farm had to be of, you know, good water quality. And so this group were doing quite a lot of discussion about sampling, what the next step would be to be sampling the water quality as it was leaving their properties to show that that all the water quality was good. And this group, after finishing this project, joined in cooperation with the ORC and did do some sampling of water as it left the farm. So there was no restrictions per se on land use, but there were the permitted activity rules that the group were very aware of around what they could do as long as there were, you know, the leaching and the water quality leaving the property was good.
And so the water permits issued don't have any controls in relation to the land use, but rather there was reliance placed on the planning framework that was in place at the time.
That's exactly right, and ORC at the time were putting a note on the bottom of every water permit that you must abide by the 6A rules at the time. And farmers took that seriously. They were sampling and they were understanding what their footprint was.
And in relation to 6A, that's now disappeared off the planning books?
No. What's gone is the date. What hasn't gone is there's still the requirement to gather all the information for Overseer and the ORC could ask for that at any time. There is also, there's no dairy in this catchment, but there are still the rules around sediment movement of bare paddocks and being able to demonstrate that you've got mitigation in place if your paddocks are bare. So there are elements of 6A that are alive. And mostly the clients that I've talked to, they expect, you know, 30 kilos of nitrogen a leaching limit of 30 has been a rule. They do not anticipate that rule to be any easier when it turns up again in the future. And the indications from the regulations are that it's on its way as part of the freshwater farm plan requirements, and farmers are aware that that's the case.
What is the freshwater farm plan? What's that?
The certified freshwater farm plans that have been talked about in the MPSFM.
All right. And that 30 kilograms of nitrogen, presumably per hectare per year.
Yeah, that's right.
That is a standard for a permitted activity.
Yeah,
and
that was across.
That was in Chapter 6A.
That's right. That was across all of Otago except the sensitive aquifers, which were lower.
Yeah, okay. So your Clyburn has been granted consent on the basis that indeed farmers will be achieving the standard for a permitted activity.
Yes, it was an individual's responsibility, but that's what's understood, yes.
They're to run Overseer, but they're not to provide Overseer to the ORC unless ORC requests it.
That's what's still alive, yes.
Okay.
Yes, because they took the date out.
So then you move on to the Lindis catchment, and the permits that were issued in relation to the Lindis, did they have any restrictions in terms of the land uses and or any conditions relating to, for example, leaching from land?
No, they didn't. They're in Otago. They picked up the 30 kilo permitted activity. There's no dairy in the Lindis catchment.
Understanding that nutrient or contamination is only of consequence when one is undertaking dairy or perhaps
no,
sport.
No, okay. Not at all.
Clear in my own mind. Yeah.
No.
Or anyway, no land use controls on the Lindis catchment.
On their permits, on their consents to take
permits.
That's right.
The next topic you discuss in your evidence is consent processing, and at your paragraph 58 you discuss the measurement and reporting of take regulations, and there you note that you do not have any clients that have not been measuring their water takes, and in most cases there's good measuring in place. So when you think about the Schedule 10A4, as the experts are now recommending to this court, where there's a reliance on water metering records, based on your experience, water data is available?
So part of that was in reference to Mr. De Pelsmaker saying that it was poorly understood. So, yes, all of our clients measure their water. And overwhelmingly, their data can be relied on. However, we have got several. We've got these open channel measuring devices that are up in the whoops where it freezes and it snows, and they can't get there to fix them. So we end up with chunks of data which are illogical. And so there are special situations where we need. Well, I would like the flexibility to backfill with other bits of proof that they've been using their water.
And the change is being recommended both to the schedule and the planning framework through the restricted discretionary activity, seeking to provide that that framework.
Mm. I'm pleased to see that. Yep.
Your paragraph 62, you express an opinion that all of the information required to understand renewal applications is available. You accept that when you think about the NPSFM 2020, that there is additional information that now needs to be understood in order to ensure that there is sufficient information available to process applications into the longer term?
Yes. So, relying on my planning colleagues, I appreciate that Te Mana o Te Wai has not been fully addressed in Otago. So that is a gap that we have. However, I believe that we've put in comprehensive applications which do give us some environmental gains, and would be a strong step towards the future. I'm particularly nervous of being in this particular space again, where not just the permits that expired in October 2021, but all those other permits that have also been lodged for the last year and a half to 2 years, they all get 6 years and they all come in again. This has been such a huge job, and it's just daunting that we would be here again and that we wouldn't take an opportunity maybe to stagger this or to take some environmental gains now in the places that we can have peace of mind while Te Mana Otawai and ORC, you know, get their plan in order. It's scary the amount of work that has hit the ORC now and for the farmers to follow through with.
Might the information that's been prepared in support of some of these applications be equally useful in informing the new land and water plan and the flow and allocation regimes that it will need to establish to give effect to the NPSFM?
That's what we've been telling our clients. I hope so.
You mentioned, or you gave some evidence in relation to the voluntary flow at the campground at Alexandra on the Manahitakia.
Mm-hmm.
And my recollection was 900 litres per second.
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware what the MALF, the mean annual low flow for the Manahitakia, is estimated to be at campground to put the 900 litres into perspective?
No, it's not. I know it's probably in the low thousands, but this is not my area, so I would prefer not to comment.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
All right. Before we hear from Ms. Baker Galloway, in terms of the evidence, I thought Mr. Webb, you know, from Webb's Orchards, gave evidence on the quarry burn and the exercise of priorities there. He sold his permit. But he was exercising his priority before he sold it about 5 years ago. So that's the quarry burn, you know, down from the low burn. So there is evidence about priorities also from someone who used to have one. Well, I used to have a permit where it was important to exercise. He now is relying on water out of the Dunstan.
That's right.
Yeah, so just to point you in another
yes.
direction, you've actually got reasonably clear evidence from him. Mm.
Yes, I mean, there's a range of evidence, and that will be useful in terms of the getting an understanding as to whether there's a need to bring down the priorities, and it's understanding the full picture of what's actually happening.
Okay.
It's the challenge.
Yeah, no, it is a challenge, and it is a challenge. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that to your attention
useful.
Because he was actually quite clear in his own recollection. Yeah.
Yes, I'm just struggling to recall Mr. Webb.
Webb's Orchards.
Yeah, I certainly remember Webb's. That was the infrastructure, the sunk infrastructure and the...
that was part of it.
Yeah, it was part of that.
Yeah.
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 It was the Wednesday of that one. Yes.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Baker Galloway.
I wanted to go back to your answers in respect of the Kyburn catchment and nutrient leaching. Just wanted to be clear. Were you saying that it's your understanding that there's a condition of consent restrict? No. Can you just re-explain how you explained the farmers' obligations in respect of nutrient leaching in that catchment?
Yes. So when the Kyburn permits were being processed, the dates for the overseer leaching elements in the plan, ORC's plan, were alive. And so those farmers knew at that point that they already had to gather all the information for overseer, and they knew that 30 kilos was on its way in. Since then, ORC have dropped the date. They've still got the requirement that you've got to keep all the information. So it was sitting as the permitted activity baseline while the permits were being processed. Yes.
Right.
Not a consent condition.
That's good. Thank you. Just wanted to clarify that. Now, just if you want to turn to paragraph 47 of your evidence. And one of your statements in paragraph 47, third line from the bottom, is if the controlled activity pathway was technically available. Just wanted to understand what you meant about that statement.
So it wasn't available to our clients because of the a number of things, but one of those things was the schedule and the averaging and some of the dates that were in there, which yep. have since been rearranged. So in putting in the applications, we couldn't even pursue that pathway for those clients. It would have they would have lost water that they currently use.
And have you familiarised yourself with the current version of the controlled activity rule?
Quite possibly not the latest of the rule. I am comfortable with the schedule and the maximums. I've not kept up with the planning and how that's tracking, except, no, I prefer not to actually go there.
So you can't update that statement about technical, whether that controlled activity pathway would now be considered technically available?
Oh, okay. So if the schedule is fixed and some of those dates, the illogical dates were gone, then it maybe it is available for the clients who were happy to roll over. But the point is moot. All the applications are in. And we didn't have that pathway. So it doesn't matter if it's now there. What will have to happen is, depending on the decision here, is what we do with those applications is farmers will have to give us some steer, do amendments, I don't know. So it wasn't available and the applications are done.
Mm. If it became an option, though, if that controlled activity rule became operative, it would be open for some of your clients to choose that six-year certain rollover pathway, wouldn't it?
We'll have to wait and see what happens. I would have to just see how the whole thing lands, really, and give some guidance at that point.
One of the comments you make right at the end of your evidence, paragraph 66... is an emphasis on confidence. You know, farmers make decisions based on trust and confidence. If there was a confidence that they could roll over their existing take in exactly the same form for 6 years, wouldn't that be a material consideration?
So what you're saying is, would it reassure them if they got the water that they were using now for 6 years? No, it would not reassure them because they have worked hard to come up with solutions that are long-term solutions. And they want to keep moving forward with their businesses or improvements, just running their businesses better, and a six-year automatic rollover of what they're doing right now will not reassure them.
Mm. Well, I think Ms. Dicey accepts, and I think you accept, that if long-term consents are granted now, once the land and water plan is in place, they could be reviewed and changed.
That's right. We have seen review clauses work. The Wainakarua, I've got clients there. They did not have minimum flows on their permits. The Wainakarua minimum flow came in and those permits had the minimum flow applied. It was a very easy process. We are comfortable that a review clause can work from the farmer's perspective. We also have the MPS FM 2020 on the table, and we've got the regulations out. We have signals from central government. There are elements such as the certified farm plans. We know that they are on the way. So we are confident that we can make strong environmental gains. We can have a responsive and adaptive farming sector to changes, and if a review clause is possible, then that's a desirable outcome. Some of the changes that we, and it's already been discussed, we don't know what's going to land in the new plan. If there are big changes, I anticipate, could be wrong, that there'll be transition windows anyway, if there are big changes. And so I'm relatively relaxed that the farmers get a window to do environmental improvements. We have discussions and we land a new plan, and then we bring in whatever is required in the future. So, review clauses, I've seen them work and they've been fine.
So you don't see them as a risk, and your clients, they're not losing confidence in the process knowing that that unknown could unwind the investment in their long-term consents?
The amount of risk and nervousness that the clients have got right now, they would like to see that they've got a longer-term permit to be able to make some choices on farm, and that a review clause is standard on permits that are being issued anyway. So, yeah, they'll be nervous about it for sure, but they know a minimum flow is coming. They know that they'll have a voice in those in that consultation and be able to put their case. So I guess the issue the permits and see what happens after that is where they are at.
Thank you, ma'am. No further questions.
Re-examination. So why is that a better outcome for farmers? Issue the permit, see where you're at with the land and water plan. Why is that a better outcome than rolling over the consents for 6 years? I'm missing something.
Yeah. Because I guess it's where... It's where their heads are. Where their heads are. We've had a lot of messages in the last 10, 15 years that we need, minimum flows are coming, the deemed permits are going to expire, and so you need to get your house in order. You need to get your efficient irrigation going. You need to have good measurements. You need to be able to prove that you're using that water really well. And so they... That's where they're up to, and all of those things are in place. And then what happens is that these are expensive decisions that they've been making. And so all the time, you know, is my bank on side? Am I tracking okay? So at the 11th hour, to be told, well, actually, no, they're six-year permits, and no, we don't have a minimum flow in place, we're not moving forward, you're going to be holding, you're going to tread water now for 6 years. It's just the opposite to where they were going.
And I understand that.
Yeah.
And I understand how aggrieved many will feel for having responded to policy signals by the ORC. And the response, of course, with considerable investment lying behind that response. And now there is it's not even a redirect on the policy, it's just a pause on the policy whilst waiting for the land and water plan. So I understand the grievance and associated with that immense stress as well. I don't understand... I think what you're saying is that a position has been taken by your clients, at least, that having met their end of the bargain, if I could put it that way, in terms of responding to that policy, they are not prepared to now take the next step, which is wait for a land and water plan. Rather, they wish their applications to be considered on the merits. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, I think that is fair. But their end of the bargain has involved everything that they thought they needed to do.
And I accept that, you know, that that will be their view. It has involved everything that they needed to do.
Yeah.
And I might be wrong, but it seems to me that it is that sense of grievance with where ORC has got to, or perhaps where the government's actually got to, because it's called in the applications, that is informing a position on to process the applications now, as opposed to processing the applications now and take the risk on a review, as opposed to process an application in 6 years' time, fully informed when a new land and water plan comes into being. Is that clear?
Yeah, I think there's also an aspect of they're already tired. This has been going on now. ORC have been promising minimum flows for 3 years, 4 years, and they didn't deliver. And now they've done all this work for applications, and then there is a land and water plan coming. And so there's just an element of, actually, can we just take the permits? Can we start doing our fish screens, start doing our residual flows, have a look at the benefits that we get, and step out of this while the plan, the new plan, beds down. And so there's, and then we'll come back. We're going to have to replace our permits later, but can we just step out and do our thing? And
I've forgotten whose evidence, somebody gave, a farmer gave evidence about being fed up with the process of being consulted, because there's been so much consultation and still they want to consult us. So I do understand the need to step out of it, or the desire to step out of it. I think the court's problem, though, the challenge that the court is facing is the consent now and review later, or don't consent now and get on with it comprehensively in so many years' time. So that seems to be the crude choices that the court has.
Farmers have also had signals from the regional council that a lot of water could be taken off them, and a lot of water. So at the moment, there is on paper about, I might be getting, about 27,000 litres a second allocated in the Manuhirikia. And there is a number sitting in 2A of about 3,500 or something like that. We're magnitudes out.
Yeah, but that's a lot of that's paper water. It was never taken anyway.
It is paper water, and it is water that's taken in spring, not in the middle of summer. And the volumes restrict so that those takes can't be taken 24/7, or the volume will blow out. You know, early in the season. So there's all of these factors in there, but the farmers have had messages from regional council that over the years that they don't understand any of that, and that they're going to shrink. They've been told over and over that the allocation is wrong and it's too high. So there is
the also allocation.
It's over-allocated. It's over-allocated. Oh. And so the farmers are going, well, how's that going to land also? And so I think you would have heard, if you do a six-year, what are we going to get after that?
Yes. I don't know, because I don't know what the messaging is.
No.
And I don't know how that messaging is either being communicated nor translated. And we've heard a lot of mistranslation as we've been sitting here listening to the evidence. So something which is Schedule 2, which is over-allocated because of the existence of those deemed permits, majority of which is never taken anyway because it can't be taken under current infrastructure. Is that over allocated? Well, I mean, putting aside the use, you know, the use of that word with the NPS, if it is, it's not necessarily a cutback on the farmer to say, well, take what your maximum is. Mm-hmm. And so that's where this plan is going. Yeah. And so do you think there's a messaging issue or something being lost in translation in terms of the next plan? Or do you think, or is it your evidence ORC has been saying whatever your maximums are under PC7, whatever they are, going to chop you back? Or is it just not clear?
So PC7, when there was the big farmer energy in PC7 was when it was notified.
Mm.
So it was notified. All the submissions went in. Mm. Everyone, you know, this was really, really scary. There's these averages. There's these 6 years.
Mm.
We've been working on long-term permits for the last 3 years. Blah, and so it was overwhelming, and in it came in. It's then headed into court, and the farmers weren't in court until last week, a week before. And it's highly technical, and so there has been discussion in court, but it's a lot of planning speak. The planners in my team do a lot of interpretation of what that means, and so PC7, when it landed, was really scary, and it remains a scary because in March all the applications were lodged, or what the last of them, and that was huge body of work. Farmers were reading all of this. They were thinking about whether they can deliver those residual flows. What's that going to do to their surety? Okay, so do we have to shift our points of take? So their heads were over in the applications in March, back to PC7 in April and May. So they've still got the, you know, those applications are this thick, and we've applied for long-term permits and done our homework, so that's where their heart is.
Mm.
And so the fact that PC7 is looking at 6 years and the rollovers are shaping to be a real rollover, it's a really big shift. And so there's all of those elements that they've brought to the table around investments and security and reassurance, they're all alive. They're very valid.
Mm. So my question was about regional council messaging after 6 years. Is regional council messaging that the takes, as would be calculated under the schedule, as it seems to be tracking, are going to be cut back? Or was the regional council messaging messaging about those deemed permits and that there would be a move to what farmers are using and not what's on paper?
Yeah. So there's no messaging coming from consents. No messaging.
From the consents team.
Because that's who's handling all of the permits.
So where's your messaging coming from when you're saying that about over-allocation and the cutbacks? What are you talking about?
That was all prior to the permits being lodged. So those messages were coming when ORC was doing all of their consultation and their tours to do with minimum flows and allocation. Originally, they were going to do minimum flows without allocation. The farmers pushed back and said, no, you can't do a minimum flow without allocation. The two go hand in hand. And the message then came from the regional council at farmer meetings, well, be careful what you ask for. Allocation is going to be really scary. And so that is... where would we be in now? So not very much happened in 2020 to do with the communication from the ORC lockdown. So that would have been 2019.
Okay. I was going to ask you another sensible question. Forgotten that. Two other questions. You said that that a consent holder on the lower Matahere Kea, by lower I mean somewhere near the... somewhere near the campsite, holds a consent with a high priority. Who's that? What consent is that?
Manahere Kea Irrigation Cooperative Society, MI. I'm going to get those last two round the wrong way. MICS.
And is that where's their take or point of take?
Just as you come out of the gorge, so OFA sits above, OFA's measuring site sits above the gorge, and then the river goes through a gorgy part. Just above before Chatto Creek, did you cross over Chatto Creek where the tavern is and the donkey?
I didn't notice the tavern and the donkey, probably helicopter.
And the trout?
No, I don't know.
In there.
Yeah, in there.
Mm.
So is it below or above the gorge or in the middle of the gorge?
It's just at the bottom of the gorge.
At the bottom of the gorge.
Yeah, so it's in a rock. It's in a real...
The hole in the rock it's take.
It's incised.
It's incised, yes.
Yeah, it's very difficult to get to.
I didn't see a donkey. Okay, but I did see that. We flew that twice, actually.
Mm.
Okay. Falls Dam. Who is the consent holder for Falls Dam?
Falls Dam Company hold the consents.
Yeah.
The shareholders of Falls Dam are Omakau Irrigation Company, Blackstone Irrigation Company, MICS, so Manihirikia Irrigation, and Galloway Irrigation Society.
Now, Omakau, Blackstone, MICS and Galloway's, are they the four big schemes of taking water off the main stem of the Manihirikia?
That's right.
And are there any other individual consents also taking water off the main stem, or is it just those big four?
No, there are a few individual permits.
Plus a few individual permits, okay.
Yep.
All right, do you have any questions?
Yes, I do, thank you. You were asked some questions about water quality in relation to some of the reconsenting exercises that you're aware of.
Yeah.
And we'd already been advised that in terms of 6A, the dated now gone.
Hmm.
But you drew us to Matt Hickey's table. Two,
which, is that the one I had before? Yes.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Where, in terms of the data available, you've got the three catchments, the Manurakia, the Cardrona and the Arrow,
mm-hmm.
and that then has heading that the SOE water quality data is available.
Yeah.
And then I moved on in terms of Matt Hickey's evidence and... talks to the information requirements that ORC are seeking in terms of the reconsenting processes that are underway. And I note that those actually refer to quite a few, have quite a few references to water quality. In terms of supporting the values such as for swimming, and then what are the effects of the take on water quality, and there's a few more as you go on down. So I guess my question to you is, in terms of these applications that have gone in, what has been done on the water quality front?
So we've got quite comprehensive water quality material in those applications. We have been particularly attentive in the areas where we know we've got some challenges. So you will have already heard about the Thompson subcatchment in the Manihirikia, and quite possibly the Poolburn area. Both those areas are our clients that are aware that there are water quality challenges, and so not only have we, Matt Hickey and Dean Olson do all of our science, so the AE includes summaries of the water quality, but we have also responded with mitigation action to address any of those issues. So
does that involve addressing land use that might be creating the problem?
That's right, it does, because for the Thompson's catchment, they've already got a project going where they've all got environmental farm plans where they're looking at implications of business management on water quality. They're doing series of sampling in and out of farms that in the what we call the sluice channels. They have also been looking at galaxid habitat and those sorts of things. So, yes, we anticipated for a lot of these consents that farm certified freshwater farm plans would be part of the consent conditions, as would a response around the water quality. So Pilburn is another challenging area for the farmers where we've got some water quality issues, and that irrigation company were sampling the water quality last year and the year before and getting an understanding of what was going on and how they would need to respond as well. So farmers have, where it's required, farmers have front-footed that issue. The full Manuhirikia application, Matt Hickey and Dean Olson did a comprehensive assessment of the whole Manuhirikia and the main stem, periphyton, water quality, everything.
So is the end result of this some attempt to backfill the fact that 6A isn't live at the moment? Or is it just looking at hot spots rather than across the catchments?
No. It was an assessment that that these permits are to take and use, and that ORC expects an assessment of use in that application, and so it was about completeness for what the applications were for. We also knew that Manuhirikia, again, for example, is we proposed a flow regime and we proposed a minimum flow at campground. So we also needed to be able to link those flows and water quality and responses from those proposed flows in how the river would behave, and that's more than a quantity discussion. That's everything. So it was about completeness.
Okay, so that's the Manuhirikia, but the other two, Drona and Arrow.
Yes, and so those? For the Arrow, we've been in the background for the Arrow, and we were fortunate in the Arrow because the ORC did have some good numbers in preparation for their minimum flow. To be honest, we are surprised they haven't done their minimum flow because they've got good information. And so we utilised the information from the Regional Council on water quality and periphyton assessments in the Arrow application. And then for the Cadrona, so that one, our applications for the Cadrona went in just in March, and again we were fortunate that ORC had done a lot of good work and we were able to use their information and their assessments for water quality and algae. And we had also done some all parties field walks, so we were on site with Ōkaha representatives a couple of years ago as part of the minimum flow consultation, and so we were able to add all that information into the application.
And does that also deal with the land use side of the equation in terms of the applications?
Just let me think about that. The ones that we've put in for the Cadrona are A couple of bigger land holdings, but a lot of smaller land holdings. Lucerne for horses, vineyards. So we did a water quality of the Cadrona. I can't say for sure. We did say that we addressed the current permitted activities. I can't say for sure because we don't have any little tributaries in those. No little tributaries in those areas. I can't say for sure, actually, on that one.
And when you answered the question about, I think it was about the Kyburn, you said that there was some sampling being done,
yep.
And that there was a condition that required good water quality leaving the farm. I didn't know
there's nothing on the consent. No, that was the 6A rules, the permitted activity rules, that were alive in the plan at the time. And ORC, there was a deadline on that, on those rules, which are about sampling any discharge on the farm and that it must be of good water quality.
Wasn't a condition.
It's not a condition,
But at the time that this was being done, I got the understanding from what you said that some sampling had been done.
Yes. Yes, and that's correct. A lot of
voluntary
farmers...
thing,
yes,
presumably.
Because that date and that permitted activity was alive until just recently. And so over the last few years, a lot of farmers have done water quality sampling because that rule meant that they had to demonstrate that only good water quality left their farm. And so sampling was being carried out on lots of farms. And in that area, the Maniototo Irrigation Company and the race companies that are under it led that in cooperation with ORC and did lots of sampling.
So that was to show that the permitted activity rule was being used.
Yeah, they were just...
Was that the idea?
That's right. They were checking that they were okay. Yep.
Okay, well, thanks for clarifying that. So the farm plans,
yep,
requirements that you're talking about, the certified ones, where are we up to with that?
I've lost
track.
Yeah, and so that's coming in the National Environmental Regulations. Have I got that name right? And that at the moment is sitting that that farms are all going to require a freshwater farm plan, and that they're going to be requiring certification. As well, and they're going to have to be audited. So I anticipate that would probably get rolled into the land and water plan. But it'll be a clearer national direction. It's already there. What's missing is central government are still fine-tuning the aspects of it. How it's going to be certified and all of those backroom elements, but I know that beef and lamb are already trying to second guess what the fit will be, so are Fonterra. So it's going to be a given, I think.
Okay, thank you.
Didn't think of the question that I wanted to ask you before. For relation to those applications that you've handled personally, are you seeking what seems to have been imposed on Kyburn and Lindis, a period of grace, if you like, of 5 years, where people permits continue under the present regime, whatever that means, update their irrigation infrastructure, and then go to a different minimum flow, different residual and so forth? Or is that all, new minimum flows, new residuals happening and new allocations happening on day one?
So no, because what happened in the Lindis is There was a really big change in infrastructure, the closing of those two races, and a lot of work had to be done on a lot of farms. So that was what the window was about. However, it really depends on how the discussion went. There is, in some catchments, it's reasonably well understood how the minimum flow or the residuals is going to be achieved, and therefore that whole trial and error isn't required. In other catchments, it is a bit of a puzzle. We have got water that's lost to ground and water that pops up, and where is it and how are we going to achieve it? And if we had to do some changes, a window for those. And so in a couple of the applications where we're going, where we would like to do the changes of a merge of a race or a combination of an intake, in the application we've actually asked for a couple of years. So
just 2 years?
It might have been 2 years on that instance. I don't know. But what we've said is that something like we'd like to keep these points of take alive until this date, and then after that it'll just be this point of take. So we've thought of ways of how can we give some of those windows. But our experience has been that once we start discussions with regional council and other parties, that we can sort of nut some of that out, that this is where we'd like to go and this is why it might take a little bit. How can we have that window? So I didn't expect big windows of grace. Well, the permits expire in October 2021.
And I only asked that because I didn't get the sense that all of the sub-catchments have trialled.
No, they haven't.
No.
So no, they haven't.
Permit holders don't know whether they are able to achieve what I expect as residual flows in the subcatchments on current infrastructure, correct?
That's exactly right.
May need to be investing in new infrastructure like on-farm storage in order to supplement any in order to supplement their take, correct?
To replace the loss in summer.
To replace the loss in summer if there's a ratcheting down.
That's right.
There might need to be storage to make sure that there's enough to, you know, achieve whatever you want to achieve on farm. And that storage may or may not be present for the individual farmer.
That's right.
And there may or may not need to be improvements to the conveyancing on farm and also the distribution systems on farm in order to achieve those outcomes for the residual flows.
That's right. And even on farm, you know, looking after water quality on farm or, you know. Yeah, you're right.
And for the sub-catchments, by that you mean the tributaries flowing into a main stem river?
That's right.
Yeah. And as far as the Manahitakia goes, those tributaries are going to be, your proposal is to control those by way of a residual flow. And on the Manahitakia, the proposal is to ensure that there is a minimum flow. And is it minimum at the campsite or is it at several points down the river?
We've proposed just at campsite.
Just at campsite. And if there's been no trial on the tributaries, I take it that there's been no whole of catchment trial either to see whether that's tenable on current infrastructure. And you said there's a couple of exceptions where a period of grace has been requested, but that's not uniform across all of the applications. And for where, can you tell me which of the two applications where the period of grace was actually requested, identified and requested, it's been
applied? Kyburn had
so
a period
of grace. Kyburn's already consented, so.
Yep, they're consented and they're out, and Lindis was.
And Lindis.
The Lindis was the one that had the period of grace.
So as far as the applications that you're involved in, which are the applications, I think, sitting on hold now. None of them have sought a time by which you can trial, confirm on-farm storage or conveyancing and irrigation systems, put that into place before a residual minimum flow is imposed?
No, not that I can remember, no.
Okay. So from day one, they're going to have to meet that.
And, yeah, you're right.
Mm.
And it's really, really daunting.
Well, it is, isn't it? Because they haven't actually done any trials.
Yeah, and I know from only rationing four people on the Tyree, it's really hard. But what I do is, as soon as it looks like it's getting low, I contact the compliance department of the regional council. I tell them that we're rationing, and our goal is that minimum flow will not be breached. And their role is to be sure that the data that I can see on the website is accurate and not to bounce that around too much. And then in the early days, I then looked for some cooperation that if I missed that the last one I called off is actually 8 hours away from, and I've got an 8-hour dip below the minimum flow, I then looked for a little bit of understanding that this is what we're trying to do, and that was a blip.
About that blip, that's all, as I understand it, it's a bit of a pick and mix out there for the Tyree, but farmers are, if you like, have voluntarily agreed to observe the minimum flows.
Yeah.
But that's not what's proposed going forward. And so, region might be quite relaxed about the observance or otherwise because they can't enforce it, but they jolly well can enforce it on your application going forward, correct?
Oh, they did enforce it in the Tyree.
They
called the water shortage direction turned them all off.
Yeah. Okay, but is that not a fundamental difference, though? Is that on the Tyree it's a voluntary measure, but actually on your applications for resource consent, it is not. That is what you're proposing going forward, an untrialled system.
Yeah, so it's just different stages of transition.
Mm.
The two deemed permits on the Tyree right now, those applications are in. And so they could have a minimum flow soon as well. So we are just in that state of some minimums are in place, some permits have been replaced, some haven't, some minimums aren't in place, and so it will be, it's a bit of a shifting sand, isn't it, for a few years.
Now, the other word that you did use, and I've forgotten in response to whose question, but you used the word transitional, and there I thought you were talking about the plan to come, the land and water plan to come. Your best guess is that it's going to contain some transitional provisions, so that might be, say, transitional water quality. So it's not all off because, you're at Bansi or the NOF or whatever it is.
Mm.
But over time, there will be a reduction in variables, be it pertaining to water quality and water quantity, in order to achieve over time some ideal outcome. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
And that's what you're telling your clients. It's not all off on the land and water plan.
No, I don't know. But my instinct is that you can't turn this the big business that is agriculture and around like that.
No.
And so what farmers really value is actually where are we going? Tell us where we're going. Up in bright lights, wherever it is, 20 years, 30 years. And then if there's steps there here are the signposts, what they've had is we don't know where we're going.
Well, that's actually what you've got on the operative plan, isn't it? You don't know where you're going, so then therefore you don't know what your response to be because the outcomes are not clearly articulated or sometimes they're actually in conflict with each other as far as the objectives go.
So for water quality, our water quality in the plan hasn't been set in FMUs but it has been set in catchments, and the standards that are already in the plan, which are the Schedule 15 standards, in many catchments are really, really tight. So we have had some strong signals from the Regional Council that, you know, these areas aren't good enough, and these areas are okay, but be careful, and these areas are pristine, do not muck them up.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I haven't actually heard, I don't think. But I have to say, I don't have a perfect recall of 15,000 pages worth of evidence, but I didn't think we had anything with Schedule 15 yet. So that's something to think about. Okay. So that's water quality, quantity anyway. Okay, quality. Right, those are questions?
It's pretty late. I just had one question about Falls Dam. The work you've done, where do the electricity generation permits fit in, or don't they?
So Falls Dam are not clients of ours, but you will have some witnesses later who do know more about that. Okay. So can I leave that to them?
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Any questions arising from the court's questions? No questions. All right, well, thank you very much, and thank you for your time. We've had a fair amount of that. That's been really helpful.
Thank you.
So we're adjourned through to 9:30 with the vague hope, faint hope that I might get a minute out tonight, but that really does depend on other people being around in Auckland. Mm.
One matter on which I wish to seek leave. Mr. De Pelsmaker is preparing a supplementary statement of evidence, or a statement of evidence in reply to the territorial authorities. Takes
due tomorrow, was it?
Due tomorrow.
Yep.
He would benefit from one extra day to finalise that.
Okay. It just crudely comes down to the time that the court has to read. 20 at the moment. Anyway, that's what I'm trying to get some issues. Yeah, no, he hasn't. You know, he's been
tied up with the priorities
as well.
He didn't get that stuff till quite late last
week. Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, we're going to grant it, but, everyone knows there's a huge surge of evidence still coming through, and so there's no guarantee that the court's going to read all of the territorial cases, some of the territorial case before we hit it. I mean, we've done the first lot of evidence, that's in the bag, but not this. Yeah.
Yes, and in a sense that the extra day is intended to ensure that brief of evidence is succinct as possible in the circumstances.
Yeah.
It would just benefit from an extra day.
Okay, no, look, there's no problems. I know that he's been working overtime. I do know that, so that's on the 20th of May, with just a signal from the court, it may not have had time to read the supplementary evidence or reply evidence in relation to the territorials before we get there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was all.
All right, anybody else? Final last request?
We're under a direction, my friends and I, to get you a memorandum about dams by tomorrow, not tomorrow morning. We will do our best. I have a feeling.
I don't want to hear the damn case unless we've got some direction on the thinking. It's really that serious, eh?
We'll do our best with the records that we can locate, ma'am. I just have this horrible foreboding sense that by 9 o'clock tomorrow morning we might be telling you that we're not quite there yet. But
and this is both in terms of providing, record evidence, or is it in terms of kind of brainstorming what the issues might look like if you're to, if dams are to do something different?
I've been provided with a schedule that I haven't yet interrogated of all of the deemed permit dams, or the deemed permits for deemed permit dams. So I don't think my friend's seen that yet, although his client staff have provided it. So that remains to be seen. But we haven't yet had the time to discuss in detail exactly how to frame the issues that you're being asked to consider. And I just don't want to go off half-cocked by 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, that's all.
No. All right. I do understand the problems. Yeah.
And at about the same time, I have to file some submissions in the High Court too, so sleep is a rare commodity.
Okay, so how do you want to go? Because I just sense that if we just get evidence in, dams could fail, poor integrity, we're not going to be any further in terms of crafting some exceptional place to take dams.
Well,
but part of the problem generally with this case is that people go, oh, exceptions for hydro. It's like, what? Well, that's easy. We've got Trustpower in front of us. But actually, there's a bunch of other hydro. Or exceptions for dams. And we think we had the dams, but then I think you're thinking a bunch of other dams. So, you know, it's like crafting, you know, is really, again, it's having an understanding of the four corners.
There is already an exception for dams because Plan Change 7 doesn't deal with RMA consent dams. So we're only dealing with deemed permit dams, and for myself, I'm not really sure why. And so what we can do is at least identify those ones so you know the scope of the issue.
Well, that's the scope of the issue as well, and what are the issues, and can they actually be sensibly carved out apart from everything else? And, you know, and I say that, you know, because if I ask myself, well, what is the activity for which, what is the proposal in relation to which the application for resource consent is, would I think it's just impounding of water? Or would I think it's impounding of water and then the subsequent discharge of the water to an irrigation tank or, you know, to hydro? And then, you know, it's the whole proposal. Is it just an element of it? And so, you know, again, the consideration of dams, if it's the whole proposal and not merely an element, then, you know, it's probably might be a waste of time actually looking at this. So, you know, it might be better just dealt with in the ORIDE let it all go case than trying to look for some sort of carve out. So you have to be turning your minds to what is the proposal? Is it just impounding of water, you know, the storage of water?
Yes.
And as a reservoir. Yeah, okay. It's giving me the correct terms.
Suggestions are on a reservoir.
I was listening.
I can't take it any further. Yeah. I just wanted to flag with you that there's a lot to do between now and 9 o'clock.
Yeah,
and I don't
want
to go half cocked to provide
But I don't really want to hear from Mr. Curran until we have and Mr. Sheenan also. I don't know whether we want to hear from them next or whether we want to get the issues and then we can actually start thinking about.
Well, I plan to call Mr. Sheehan next because I have asked him, in the light of what's been going on, to take the court through the deemed permit dams and the issues in relation to them that he's familiar with. And so he has a presentation to inform you about that. And so I think you might be in a better position to understand at least the issues from his point of view in the morning.
We might have to recall him. And I know you've been waiting for a while, actually. I saw you here yesterday. So we might have to, if we have him in, we might have to have him back.
Yes, well, that's a possibility.
Yeah. All right. So how much time do you think you need, bearing in mind all of that? Yeah.
I suspect longer than 9 o'clock tomorrow morning based on the discussion just now.
Okay.
So, and I'm just looking at the schedule, so Mr. Curran and Mr. Sheehan are the two witnesses. I'm not sure whether Ms. Scott is dealing with damming. They're the two. Just seeing who we might bring forward in the schedule. My friend's just indicated that Fish and Game might be in a position to bring forward some witnesses, and perhaps we could have the two damming witnesses on the Thursday.
I can bring forward Ms. Scott and Mr. Craw tomorrow morning, and Mr. Dicey will be arriving about 11 o'clock, snow, will it?
Who's Ms. Craw?
Mr. Craw, Hayden Craw, the
Matthew Craw. Don't want to hear from him until we get the issues. Sorry, Craw. How do you spell it?
He's at the top of the next page.
Oh, Court, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yes.
Court, I see. Yep.
And so Ms. Scott is also in the court, and she can present to my mum.
Oh, yep. Okay, so your proposal then is to keep Mr. Sheen and Mr. Curran until after we hear from Scott, Dicey and Crawl, is that right?
Will that be long enough?
Is that what you're thinking?
So are you wanting to receive the memorandum from Mr. Moore and I before you hear from those witnesses?
Absolutely. I'm making it crystal clear. I do not want to hear your planning until we actually hear your issues. And my preference would be actually to have those issues in before we hear from Mr. Sheen, otherwise we might have to recall them.
Can I suggest an alternative? I can understand Your Honour's wish not to hear from the planner until you've sized what the issues are. That makes sense to me. But I think that you might be assisted by hearing from Mr. Sheehan, because that'll inform your understanding of the planning evidence.
If he can be recalled, and you'll have to... if he can be recalled, if we still have questions coming.
Yes.
Yeah.
So my suggestion is we'll hear from him first thing and recall him if required.
All right. And so we know that Mr. Sheehan's available?
Yes.
He's nodding away. Good. Okay, so we'll go with Mr. Sheen, Mr. Crawl, Mr. Dicey, and then Ms. Scott.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we'll hear from Mr. Curran at some time after that memo comes in. And then hopefully, I don't know, hopefully we'll be up to Federated Farmers case.
Fish and Game.
Fish and Game? Oh. Federated Farmers.
Well, at least one witness, Dr. Dawn Noble.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, ma'am, yes.
Yep.
And then there's a lay witness scheduled for tomorrow afternoon for Federated Farmers, Mr. Lord.
Yeah, we're good with that?
Yeah.
You don't want to go too early? No, you're right. Okay, good. So we'll just stick with Dr. Dawn Noble and Mr. Lord. Okay. All right. That sounds like a plan. Does that mean to say you don't even think you'll get your issues nutted out by tomorrow, given how much is...
I'd rather suspect it's going to be a tomorrow evening, finalise the memorandum job.
So
then we would have Curran on the Thursday morning, having filed the memorandum.
Or
after.
We could knock out all the Fish and Game witnesses on Thursday. Because they're all on their way.
They're all on the way. We're going to hear your witnesses.
Yeah.
Okay. And anyway, I don't want to see that memo and have see that memo here from Mr. Curran simultaneously at the same time. It's not, be a wasted exercise. So, we'll have that memo in and we'll reschedule Mr. Curran at a time of Fish and Game's convenience. How about that? Yeah. It's probably the best we can do. Yeah. All right, very good. And Mr. Cooper's noted that as well. Okay, and then probably not going to get that memo out because I'm a minute out because I'm waiting on people in Auckland to release it, which no doubt they've gone home. So that'll go out tomorrow morning with those two changes included. Mm. Anything else I need to do? Nothing. Okay, good. I'll have that done. Right, thank you, and we're adjourned. All rise.